Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John engineering and producing our program, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, February 16th, 2021. It always feels like a Monday when we have these three-day weekends. Hope everybody had a very, very happy Valentine's Day and President's Day holiday. We're in our 11th year here on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Our website, buckmastershow.com, not only has the live stream of our program, but years of podcasts are all available and nicely archived for you. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to the city of Marana. The mayor there, Ed Honey, is the longest serving elected official in Pima County. Mayor Honey is in 33 years of serving in the town of Marana. Mayor, how are you?
I am doing well, Bill. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. How will Marana emerge out of the COVID year of 2020? How badly were you hit?
We weren't hurt much at all. I mean, if you're talking about growth and expansion and projects and everything else, we actually had more sales tax last year than we did the year before. And our housing permits are skyrocketing. We had 99 new single-family houses in Marana in January, which is our biggest month in about 3 years. So things are happening in our community. People are moving here quickly. Our stores are doing pretty well. You know, we weren't a hard shutdown, Bill, like a lot of the county was. Anything that we could leave open, we left open.
How about tourism sector? Was that badly hit in Marana?
That's the only place we were down. Marana has 14 different hotel motels, you know, ranging from Motel 6 to the Ritz-Carlton. And that has been down. You know, most of the hotels average about 60% if you average them year-round of their available rooms. And I think they've been averaging about 25%. So that is down. But that's really about the only sector that is down.
Tucson police are suffering from a hemorrhaging of manpower and women power leaving the department for places like Marana. Can you offer a better deal for a law enforcement officer?
Well, I mean, the Tucson PD personnel are phenomenal. I don't want to say anything bad about them. There's not enough of them, Bill. At least if you come to Marana, our per capita policing is at a much higher rate.
You're paying more, in other words.
Well, I think we were paying a little bit more, but I mean, it's not necessarily a reason to leave another policing. You know, if you can make a couple thousand dollars more, if you're invested in the retirement program or something somewhere else, there has to be other reasons to leave. But we have a waiting list of personnel in our police department from both TPD and SO.
Let's talk about RTA. The report is out. Their annual report is out today. Mayor Honey, of course, you're a member of the board because all of the mayors of the jurisdictions are on the board. Since the voters approved the RTA in 2006, more than 870 roadway safety, transit, environmental, and economic vitality projects have been delivered. What's the future of RTA? Will there be a renewal, in your opinion? You've seen a lot of things in your 33 years as mayor. Will there be a renewal?
I certainly hope so. I wouldn't guarantee it. I mean, there's still a lot of differing opinions going on. As far as I'm concerned, the RTA has been the most successful community endeavor. I'm talking counties, cities, towns, tribe nation, all this. in Pima County for the last 20 years. We were able to all get together, agree on projects, agree on a taxing rate, and have done really well. The RTA came up short about, I think, $300 million because we were not collecting as much as we thought we were. So what the PAG Council did was vote to give a huge amount of PAG money to the RTA. It's still local money.
That's PAG is the, for folks that don't know that acronym, that's the Pima Association of Governments.
And I am chair of that, but I won't be shortly. We'll be changing pretty quickly, but, you know, we use it. But PAG gave a lot of money. I mean, it's still local money to be spent locally on projects. And we didn't want the RTA to come up short with some of the projects in the last quarter, the last 5 years. So PAG gave a bunch of Pima Association of Government money to the Regional Transportation Authority to keep it whole and get all of the projects done right up till 2026.
And, of course, the renewal would be in the 20-year renewal would be coming up in 2026. Mayor, let's talk about you say you haven't been as hard hit in Marana by the COVID, but generally for the region, how are we going to get back on our feet here in Pima County, Mayor Honey?
Well, I think we've got to open it up, and there's a big difference in a lot of political leaders in how the RTA should be handled. One of the things that the Marana Council, the mayor and senior staff agreed upon is a lot of families are getting hurt by the shutdown. If you have young families that can't pay their mortgage or can't pay their rent or can't pay their car payment because businesses are shut down and they're out of work, that really hurts everybody. So our philosophy was do it correctly, open up safely, but open up as much as you can. If you look at Florida compared to, say, New York or California, Florida is completely open, and they don't have any more COVID than California or New York that are completely shut down.
Hmm. And as far as restaurants, were you able to, of course, they're in Pima County, but your restaurants, did they have to go by the Pima County rule?
Well, some of the stuff, the mask thing did. Of course, Pima County also did a curfew. And that was taken to court and found that it was not legal. So, our restaurants and bars can stay open until 2 o'clock.
How about the COVID shot? Have you taken it?
I haven't taken the shot because I've had COVID.
You did have it.
And I got it early December and did pretty well for a 73-year-old guy. Did not get that ill, ran fever for a few days, but general rule of thumb is if you have had COVID, you will not get the shot until at least 90 days after you test negative.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I tested negative in the middle of December, so it'd be about the 1st of April before I would really be eligible for a shot. But I've already had the COVID virus.
When is your term up, Mayor?
Well, I just got elected.
That's right.
In August.
Yeah, so you've got
four more years,
and you're doing pretty well, and you're healthy, so it's full speed ahead, I guess, right?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think that I've done a very credible job. This last election is the first time that I've ever run that where nobody ran against me.
Huh? Unopposed. Unopposed.
So, you know, I kind of enjoyed that election. Not out putting up signs or,
yes,
you know, trying to convince at least 50% of the people that you'll do a good job. But Town of Marana has a very senior council. Councilmember Kai has 27 years.
Wow.
Councilmember Ziegler and Councilmember Comerford will have 20 by the end of this term. So we don't have a big turnover.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I credit that to the fact that I think people in Moran are happy with what we're doing.
All right, we'll leave it on that happy note. Ed Honey, always a pleasure. Thank you, Mayor. Stay safe and be well.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Ed Honey, the mayor of the town of Marana. Now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Discovered something new up at Mona's. Oh, my goodness. Chocolate chip muffins. Oh, my goodness. Ann and I went up there a little bit late on Sunday, and they... Boy, all the cinnamon rolls were gone. I guess I've been talking those up too much because they were all gone, and I was looking for my cinnamon roll, and the blueberry muffins were gone, but they brought out something new, and it's a chocolate chip breakfast muffin, and it was to die for. It was absolutely wonderful. So I'm glad it all worked out. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. You can check out the website. Call ahead for your bakery goods. Put in your order there. They're at the northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, and they're open right now for lunch. We'll be right back with Shelley Fishman.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. all of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through BuckmasterShow.com or at ShelleyFishman.com.
And I'm ready to contact Shelley through the plexiglass in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Shelley, how was your Valentine's Day, President's Day weekend? Kind of take it easy.
Let's call it uneventful.
Uneventful. There you go. Shall I notice the New York Times Magazine had a piece on Sunday about kind of the direction of, you know, perhaps a return to big government. It really brought a question about now that the impeachment is off the table, what really is the direction of the Biden administration economically?
Well, and, you know, the good news, Bill, is that we can now, you know, putting impeachment behind us, at least hopefully, we can now begin to talk about the Biden economic plan and the conflicts and arguments that are kind of normal as legislation is proposed and then whittled around and policy gets made. We do have a situation in Congress which is, you know, very polarized. So it's not clear that all of the things that Biden would like to do, certainly in his first year or two, are going to run smooth. But what we see, I think, is kind of a return to an approach that says that big government is going to set priorities and big government won't be afraid to back up those priorities with significant public money. So those two things are kind of something we haven't seen in a while. There's always been a compromise that says we need to get to a balanced budget. We shouldn't be picking winners and losers. The free market needs to act on its own. What we're beginning to see now under the Biden plan is that under the rubric, under the umbrella of the kind of $1.9 trillion pandemic relief, we're seeing stimulus that's really designed to combine some things together in terms of setting the government's priority for what it wants the free market to do and put money behind those desires such that we're seeing companies kind of line up behind it. The one that comes to mind is the automotive business, the automotive industry, which has certainly been the beneficiary of government largesse in the past, but now is beginning to say, yeah, we agree with the idea that we need to get emissions down, greenhouse emissions down to zero. And large companies, both in Europe and here in the States, are setting objectives that nobody would have believed they would have set, and beginning to do the kind of research that they need to do to make electric cars that, have 350-mile on a charge distances. And to do that, we need batteries, and we need battery plants here in the United States. So it's, strictly speaking, it may not be the automotive industry that is the direct contributor to those battery plants, but right now China is the leader. There's something like 125 battery plants under construction right now in the world, and we've only got 9 of them.
Really?
Here in the States.
9?
So, yeah. So we've got to get going with that.
You know, and the knock on all of this is states, it smells of state-sponsored capitalism when you think of that you think of the Scandinavian model.
Well, exactly. It does. Mm-hmm. It not only smells of it, it is. because, you know, nobody would say, well, some people would, but I wouldn't say that Europe and certainly the Scandinavian countries are not capitalistic countries. They are capitalistic countries. They don't have a lot of government ownership, but the government sets priorities, and the safety net for citizens is a much more broadly kind of accepted safety net than ours is here. So taxes are higher. But putting that aside, if you're running a business in Europe, then you're going to have to listen to what the priorities of the governments within which you do business are. More so in Scandinavia than in Southern Europe, but we're beginning to see in this Biden kind of rollout of his economic plan that when you take the example, and I hate to include China in this group, but it is in the group, they have a new way of looking at business and what the role of private capital should be in their economy. And, you know, the first time I became familiar with this, I was reading a book by Ian Bremmer. Hopefully our listeners are familiar with him. He shows up on television a lot now. Back in 2010, when I first interviewed him on the radio, he was only beginning to emerge, the Eurasia group that he headed up. But he wrote a book called The End of the Free Market, in which he goes country by country by country to show how those countries are changing the face of capitalism and bringing the free market model into kind of sync with their government objectives and government planning for how they want their economies to grow. Now, you know, you can call this picking winners and picking losers. You can call it a type of socialism. You can call it whatever you like. But a lot of the world is moved in that direction. And the statistics on how they're doing once they've moved there are not bad. I mean, you know, in the past 20 years, the Chinese economy, if you adjust for the standard of living, is equal to ours now. Now, they don't have the middle class that we have. And so there is a lot more poverty, and building that middle class has always been one of China's largest objectives in bringing their economy to the top of where the world is. But you know, put that aside, you have an economy in the 2010, 2011, 2012 in China that was growing at 11-12% when we were growing at 2-3%. And right now they're doing badly and only growing at 6%. So yeah,
having to step back, huh?
Now, you know, you can say, well, it's not fair. They're picking winners and losers. The government is making decisions for them. And that's true. So there are bad things to take away from that example and good things to take away from it. And I think certainly what the New York Times article was talking about and what we're seeing with the $1.9 trillion COVID pandemic stimulus package is the Biden administration saying, look, there's a whole bunch of things we need to address. We need to address the pandemic, but you can't just address the pandemic. We still have climate change and we have infrastructure and we have poverty and income inequality. We've got globalism that is kind of not meeting the needs of all of our people. It's meeting the needs of some, but certainly not all. We've got to bring those things into a more coherent strategy. And though that scares a lot of people, to a certain extent me among them, it is the way Biden is kind of rolling out this plan.
It's really his blueprint at
this
point, isn't it, Shelley Fishman? Yeah. It's the Biden blueprint of really what he wants to accomplish in at least the first couple of years of the administration.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's an America first strategy.
Yes, it is.
And you say, well, how can it be America first if you know, we're not going to put tariffs on our competitors, et cetera? It's America first because from the perspective of the industries that need to be developed and emerge as you move forward, those are going to be developed here. Plus, he's got a government policy that says it's got to be built here in America if there's going to be a federal government contract. So it, you know, remains to be seen how this is going to roll out. It remains to be seen if there's going to be some inflationary pressures. Some very smart economists, in fact, today in the in the Financial Times in London, there's a very long article that talks about what the inflationary pressures might be or may not be. Right now, Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, and Janet Yellen, new head of I just went blank. I'm sorry, but
they have signed off.
But they've signed off on this. Larry Summers, who used to have all of those jobs, not all at once, of course, expressed some concern that 1.9 might be too much all at once because it might not allow the Biden administration then to do the things it wants to do down the road if there are inflationary pressures. All of those discussions are great to have. And I think the American public needs to get away from some of this craziness and divisiveness and start focusing on real policy that's going to affect people in their pocketbooks, their ability to get educated, their ability to just remain and grow in the middle class. It's very important stuff. By the way, the president is giving a kind of a town hall tonight from Milwaukee, I think.
Yeah,
it is.
It's his first trip on Air Force One.
Yeah. Yep. And so I expect that he'll be questioned very heavily on this stuff.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. I hope you have a great week, and see you next Tuesday.
Yes, sir, Bill.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. My name is Bill Buckmaster, and we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, Gina, you know, if we could get just a little more rain. We had that 2 or 3 day event last month, but we really need some more rain for the garden. And Green Things is the place to get all of your spring plants. 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more. Open daily at 3384 East River Road. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. And on the same property, it's a real twofer, it's Zocalo Village. There's five kind of little collection of like a Zocalo Village of shops that are full of pottery from the beautiful Talavera, antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, lighting, home accessories, and more. Their website, ZocaloVillage.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education, and he is the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District and one time top school superintendent of the year. Dr. Hendricks, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing just fine, and I'm seeing a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel, and that just excites me for everyone, myself, and everyone I know.
Yeah, it's interesting that recent polling shows that despite COVID, 26% of likely Arizona voters said a general lack of funding for schools tops their list of education concerns. So what the bottom line is, education, Dr. Hendricks, is still the top issue for Arizona voters.
It absolutely is. And, you know, the passage of Proposition 208, which some have referred to as the Robin Hood bill because it places an education tax on the wealthy. And obviously, some of those folks are not happy with that mandate and took it to court. And recently, we've actually gotten a second ruling from the Superior Court Judge Hanna in Phoenix that we're going to proceed with the mandate of the people to activate this proposition. And that's certainly good news for the education community.
Is it a game? Is it a game changer, Bob Hendricks?
It is, and I say that with a little bit of hesitancy, but I think there are some protections that we're building into this proposition that are going to make it more likely that it's going to help things. You know, it narrowly passed, Bill. I was surprised. I thought it would be an overwhelming pass, but it squeaked by at 51% margin. But it did pass, and it essentially puts a surcharge of 3 to 5% on the personal income of Arizona individuals who earn above $250,000, and that's married couples making $500,000. So, you know, it is the state's wealthiest individuals, and you know, you wonder, you know, what percentage of people make that kind of money? It's 4%. And so these 4% of Arizona's population by adding this surcharge through their individual property or individual personal taxes will generate an estimated $872 to $940 million annually. And what's important is that this is outside the budget limits, and that's really critical because sometimes legislators have a way of folding in these increases like they did with the lottery, and they supplant what's given and they take it away. And so there's an assurance that this money is going to be dedicated to increasing teacher salaries, and a sense for it being outside the budget limits, the legislators can't touch it. And so this is really interesting. You know, I've watched propositions across the country, and you know, there's this big debate whether, you know, a proposition, which is essentially the will of the people, can essentially override what the legislature has done. Of course, this is the argument with the judges, is the legislature has said, look, you know, if you don't have two-thirds of the legislature approving a budget increase, you can't do it. And so the judge essentially has ruled that, no, a proposition, you know, if it's approved by the people, has equal weight to the power of the legislature. And so he's saying, yes, you can go ahead and raise these taxes. And the only thing that is left for the people who have contested this mandate to do is to take it to trial, which certainly could happen. But there's a lot of folks, a lot of experts saying, you know, this would be a long extended trial with the burden of proof being on the people who are challenging it, and there's not much likelihood that it would succeed. So it looks like it's going to happen, and as I said, I think it's really, really good news. It's not going to income tax impact individuals until April 2022. But they're still starting to collect the money on the books, and I think it's going to be a major impact for teachers. It certainly will get us out of the bottom quarter of states in terms of salary rankings. Doesn't get us to the top, but it'll get us closer to the middle, and I think that's, you know, that's what we can hope for at this point.
We're talking to Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks is the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. The Tucson Unified School District is looking at reopening campuses after spring break in late March. The president came out, President Biden had a plan to reopen schools. Now we begin the big question. How is all of this rebuilding going to take place after what some feel has been really a lost year of learning? It was interesting. The cover story in the New York Times yesterday, Dr. Hendricks, was about Providence, Rhode Island, where they said, we're going to go it alone. They were the largest school district in the United States that said, we are not going to close our schools. And they have had remarkable success in Providence, Rhode Island, by keeping school open.
Well, that's a judgment call. And I think we, you know, school districts locally could have made that call as well. In fact, some of the districts that were out of the gate early, you know, had to pull back because they did have some cases. And so I think districts wanted to move ahead, but they've had to do some backtracking. And, you know, I'm hoping, you know, we've got, as of Monday, most school districts have now transitioned to a hybrid model. In other words, you know, most school districts in Tucson are open, are partially opened, you know, on a staggered schedule. They're doing this to reduce the numbers of students in a classroom. And hopefully that's going to move forward to a traditional schedule. But, you know, we still have Sunnyside, who had opened at one time and had to close, and they're going to reopen on March 1st. And then CUSD, who opens on March 22nd, which essentially they closed last March. So that's, they've been closed almost a full year.
Wow.
Which is kind of unbelievable. But now we have, you know, report that over a third of Pima County teachers have been vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have, you know, I think that's really encouraging because some, you know, some districts are saying, you know, we really want to hold back. We want to keep the staggered schedule, want to keep things monitored. We want to keep things socially distanced, particularly in classrooms, in hallways, in restrooms, and places where students gather. And we know if we put an entire population of students in a school at one time right now, we might not be able to abide by those guidelines and regulations. So school districts are being, you know, very cautious about that. And you mentioned President Biden, and you know, we've heard his 100-day promise that schools will open. And, you know, I applaud that, but I think there's some rhetoric there, too, because what does he really mean by schools opening? Well, we've heard his press secretary the other day talk about the hybrid model, and maybe the hybrid model, you know, meets that definition of a school opening. You know, maybe it's not fully opening, but maybe the goal is to get, you know, students back and in-person learning.
I think that's what they're implying, that even being partially open would fit into the criteria for the 100 days.
I agree. And you know, statistically, 60%, if you look at school districts across the country, 60% of the school districts now are operating a hybrid model.
Mm.
And some of that happened before the Biden administration, to be absolutely fair. But it is increasing. And I think people are more encouraged by that, as we see here in Pima County, you know, as more teachers get their shots. But there's still a reluctance. And also, let's remember that, you know, one of the biggest supporters of President Biden were the teachers associations, the teacher unions. And, you know, the teacher unions, particularly in the urban communities in San Francisco and L.A. and Chicago, are really pushing back from having schools open. And so, you know, this places a real dilemma for the president, because Randy Weingarten, who's president of Gardner, who's president of the AFT, large teacher union, very active, affiliated with the AFL-CIO, and also a contender for the Secretary of Education committee, Secretary of Education position, which she did not get, has really been pushing not to open schools right now.
And I also want to touch on, before we go today, Dr. Hendricks, Arizona schools, a possible loss of funding due to that online learning model. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Be right back. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. We're counting the days till we'll be able to take that road trip, 3-hour trip over to Silver City. You can start your planning now. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all sorts of information about outdoor activities, like a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Also, information about great places to stay. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Buckmaster Show contributor on education. He's the Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education and the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. We were talking about schools, the hybrid model of schools partially reopening. How does that affect loss of funding? I understand that some of the schools may be facing a loss of funding due to their online learning model.
Well, they are, Bill, and it's because of the way that the Arizona budget is structured. You get school districts receive their money on a per pupil allocation, and the per pupil allocation for remote learning formula gives school districts 5% less than that same student if they're learning in person. And so this is a dilemma for school districts, because to the tune of about $30 million statewide. And so this budget loss was accounted for this past year. The legislature took care of the shortfall, but the legislature has yet to act on this school year, and we're still waiting. Districts are still waiting for the legislature to say, we'll give you that that money that you might have lost, or that you have lost because of circumstances completely beyond your control.
I'm sorry, but that seems like a no-brainer. It's been out of their control. They had to go to this online. I guess they didn't have to, but they should be reimbursed.
Well, you would think so, but there has been no action on it for this budget year. Again, the shortfall was addressed last spring for the last budget year. I think it's just a matter of time. I'm gaining a sense that even the Republican legislators are saying, you know, look, this is something that we have to adjust. But there's one other major shortfall, and that is the loss of students across the state. There have been, based on the 100th day, which is a point in time which is used to determine, you know, how many students are actually in seats that we're going to fund. Based on that day, districts across the state saw a loss of 6,650 students.
Wow.
Which translates to about $200 million.
Hmm.
And so, you know, districts, you know, are basically operating at a loss on money that they assumed that they would have, but are not getting because of loss of students. And of course, that varies from district to district, but, you know, even the more affluent districts are indicating that they have lost a significant number of students. And we've talked about this before. Some students simply can't be accounted for. Others have gone to private schools or other educational endeavors such as homeschooling. And so we don't know, but, you know, somehow the legislature is going to have to address that shortfall as well, because districts are operating in many cases on fixed budgets. And even though there's a major dip in the number of students, they still have their bills to pay. And so hopefully we can work on that problem and the legislature can resolve it.
You know, you mentioned one in three teachers had taken the vaccine. That figure, to me, seems low. The vaccine has been available to teachers. They were in pretty much the top group. I wonder if we're going to get up to two out of three teachers. I would be very comfortable if we could even get that, wouldn't you?
I would. And I know that the U of A vaccination enterprise has been largely focused on getting teachers, educators, K through 12, as well as higher ed educators vaccinated. And people seem, you know, in that profession seem to have not had too much difficulty getting an appointment. You know, maybe part of that statistic takes into account that people have not gotten their second shot yet.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to analyze that number, but the number seems, the percentage seems to be inching up every day. We do know that there's a group of students that will continue to want to be educated at home remotely, and so we have to have a critical mass of teachers that can go back or are willing to go back into the classroom. Of course, part of that is the requirement that the district places on them. Do they need to be vaccinated to come back into the workplace? That seems to vary from district to district. And there's also some indication that some of the larger districts across the country are not just using teachers, they're using monitors as well, classroom aides, as a support mechanism to have live bodies into the classroom. And that's a bit of a concern as well, is, you know, who are these people? What is their background? You know, what added value do they really bring? You know, is that actually better than remote learning where you really have a teacher in front of you?
So all right.
There are many unresolved problems, but I am optimistic that we're moving in the right direction. Certainly not as quickly as people want. I don't see full school openings until the fall. That's my prediction.
All righty.
Let's see how it goes.
Robert Hendricks, thank you very much. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon, everybody.